Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
31-4 is the record. 30-5 is the record of the opponent tonight.
Oh, you were late on that one.
I had to go up to the satellite
and come back down, right?
He's over there doing the whole thing, man. You give him the poor guy grief.
I only have two hands.
Look, I know what he did last week. He was able to do all of this, play his own drops, and host the show by himself.
Yeah, don't tell management or we're done.
Yeah, that's right.
That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Menigan. Meredith taking your phone calls, 216-474-0092. The clear.
Oh, you know what? I've had that same thing for the last 2 days.
Yeah, well.
It just gets you when you want to say the last word.
The clear difference in this team this year is obviously the coach and the offensive philosophy. You might be able to also throw in the beginning of the evolution, I think, of Evan Mobley. And if you just look at Evan's stats, they're not overwhelmingly different than they've been in the past. I mean, they're a little better. You know, his scoring is up a couple of points a game, you know, over his best. His rebounding is about what it's always been. His shooting is about what it's been last year, down a little bit. His shot attempts, Andy, up a little bit, but not much. And like 1-2 shots a game. That's all it's up. But he looks like a different, more confident player. And I think that's part of the evolution of a guy who I think is the key to the whole thing. He's only 23, still only 23 years old. And I think he's the key to what this franchise can be moving forward. I think he's it. And we're starting to see it. Small glimpses. You know, the three-point has been added to his game. You know, he's taking a couple of those every game. He's making one of those every game. But the way that he has developed with this team, with Donovan Mitchell backing off a little bit. Chris Fedor wrote a really nice piece in Cleveland.com all about that. And the way Kenny Atkinson has pushed Evan Mobley to become more of a force, I think that's been, along with Kenny's offensive system, the key to the entire thing this season.
I agree. I can't disagree with anything you're saying there. It just, he looks bigger. He looks stronger. He
looks more confident.
Yeah.
That's it to me more than anything. He's playing with a little more aggression. And I think his game, even though the numbers are very similar, he just seems more impactful, at least in regular season games. Now, can he do that, you know, come playoff time? Can he be that guy? He made a huge jump from his first year to his second year of being in the playoffs. He was a different guy last year in the playoffs than he was, you know, the year before.
Just 5 games. Like before we had this conversation, I just wanted to go back and look at some pictures of him, like when he was at USC compared to where he is now, and just his whole body, right? I mean, he's a different player. I used to say, like, get him a couple more cheeseburgers. Okay, well, he got a couple more cheeseburgers, but he turned them all into muscle. Well,
some of that's called aging.
Yeah, but I think most times when we age, we go backwards, not forward. I mean, he's going forward. He was a pro athlete.
Guys tend to get bigger as they get older.
Yes.
So you're
around the stomach.
No, not necessarily. Damn. Shoulders, everything else. You're naturally.
No, shoulders naturally. Yeah. These are factual.
You're supposed
statements.
To get bigger.
Hello and welcome to Mr. Phelps's health class. We're talking about puberty now. Yes. Go ahead.
Dude went right to puberty. What the heck is that all about?
That's what life is all about, man.
I will add no more to this for fear of meetings and firings.
What? We're talking about a health subject. Are we not about public information?
I would assume that Evan hit puberty before he got to the NBA.
Are you going to hop on a Magic School Bus with him?
Don't you think that it's more...
came to the NBA with 6'11".
I mean, but we're so stuck on the first day of it when you should think about the entire process. Jeff, you're a process guy. Your body is constantly maturing. It's going into different phases. Mine went from muscles upstairs to... midriff. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Future
muscle head.
I looked in the mirror the other day. I was like, oh my God, how did I become an offensive lineman?
Still got good footwork.
Yeah, because it's stuck in my mouth all the time. That's the problem.
Do you think this is the beginning of the evolution of Evan? And it is his fourth year.
Yes, I do.
Or, like, do you see him down the road becoming, for instance, right now, you know, his averages are really solid. Mm-hmm. 18.8 points a game, 8.7 rebounds a game. So, you know, like 19-9 is what he's averaging right now.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Can he become a 23-10 guy, 23-11? Does he need to become that kind of a guy for this team to get to where it needs to be? Or would that be counterproductive to the whole core four notion?
So I think the way it's set up now, I agree with the latter, that it's counterproductive to that. But as, you know, he gets two or three more years into the league, and what if he becomes the go-to guy? Can he be a go-to guy? Is he the guy that's going to lead your team to victory every night? Or is he going to be the guy that quietly gives you, would you say, 23 a night? Is that what you were just saying?
It's hard to be quiet with 23 a night.
It depends when you're scoring those points. They're super loud in the last 2 minutes of the game. If you're putting in 23 and, you know, spraying them out between first, second, third quarters, and, you know, a couple in the first 2 or 3 minutes of the fourth, that they're not loud points. You know that as well as I do.
I still think this team would be at its absolute best if he were to take, like, another step and become...
It's clearly there. Become, you can see it.
Yeah, I mean...
Well,
we
saw the step he's taking this year.
Sure, and I think he's capable of that. You know, I like the idea more so, and Darius has been terrific this year. He's bounced back. He's looked really good. He's averaging 20 points a game. Donovan's averaging 23 points a game.
With the exception
of
Donovan,
I still would love to see maybe those averages switch just a little bit, where Darius is averaging like 17 and he gets an uptick in assists.
Is it fair to say we're watching Darius and Evan mature on the court?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's the right way to say it.
I mean, Darius is still a really young guy. He's only 24. He'll be 25 in January.
Yeah, I think we forget how young these guys are when they first come into the league.
Right, which is part of the point of this whole thing.
Right. It's not, I don't know, are we basing things on what we grew up on, going, oh, these guys, you know, they have 4 years in college, right? No.
No, I mean, it's a different world, but we've seen young guys in their early 20s come in and be very impactful, as these two guys have been. I think the next step for this team is still the evolution of Evan, but we're seeing it already, and I think that's been one of the two huge factors in why this team is better this year. The other one is clearly the offensive system and the coaching of Kenny Atkinson and his staff.
Only drama I think that they can have now, and it's the same thing that we talked about in the offseason, was, you know, I don't think I've heard you say once duplication of skills at the guard position this year. I don't think I've heard you say it at all this year.
I don't think it's been quite as evident. I still think it's there. And
will that be the catalyst to break up this core four still?
Well, I don't know that you have to break it up.
I don't think you do either, but I mean, you want that. That's the tiny drama that we see in Cleveland. The rest of the country is not seeing that.
Well,
they don't care.
It's not even a drama, though. It's just the way the roster's constructed. And you can't argue with the way it's working in the regular season.
Not at all.
It's phenomenal. And Donovan has changed his game a little bit, you know, backed off a little bit. And Darius's game has come up this year. Darius dealt with a lot of things last year, you know, health-wise. And this year, obviously, he's healthier and he's playing great basketball. I just wonder, come playoff time, is that a winning formula? And we won't know until they get there. Maybe it is.
You were reading some headlines about, you know, what other people think about the team. You were doing this a couple minutes ago, just about, like, are they for real? Is the schedule going to, you know, the schedule gets harder? Like, I think these are things that Cavalier fans were talking about a month ago. You know, you kept saying, like, I kept saying, well, they got to go out west.
Well, it's because a lot of folks haven't been paying any attention to the Cavs nationally.
Yeah, because it's, well, NBA doesn't start till Christmas, right? Isn't that the way it works?
I hate that narrative.
You hate it, but is it true?
No, it's not true.
Is it true?
No. It's not true at all.
With the exception of a couple teams, everybody else seems to
be sharp enough. Don't pay attention until then.
Wow, look at you. Rip.
Well, no, Andy, it's like, does baseball start until June? Well, yeah.
It does?
Yeah, they see. There you go.
I thought they started after the All-Star break. I don't know. What's the whip on that? What's the war on that? I look. Yeah, that's right. You can't have nice things. Listen, it's not that. It's basketball started, right? I'm not, it's hard, it's really hard to get engaged when you're like, oh, okay, oh, they play all night. Oh, okay. You know, like tonight's one of those games where we're almost at the halfway point of the season. We're knocking on the door of that. And now you've got two of the best teams. Like, we care. Oklahoma City cares. I want to see how ESPN tries to sell the game tonight. That's what I want to see. How are they going to sell this game tonight? You know, with all their storylines, do you understand where I'm going with that? Like the producer that walks up to you and go, okay, here, I mean, all right, man, you easily sit in there and go, we've got two of the best record teams in the NBA, but.
I would think they sell it as two of the best young teams in the NBA, and is this their time? I would think that's what they try to sell it as.
Does that drive.
But you don't have to sell it, just put it on TV and let it sell itself. And they're going to do that.
I don't know if that's true. Like, I don't know if is the rest of the. If you're a basketball fan, you're watching tonight, right? If you, like the people you're saying that know the season starts is, starts in October, right? They're the ones that are watching this game tonight, going, "Oh well, this should be a good matchup. I want to watch it." But I don't think the average. I think I want to be entertained by a basketball game tonight. Fan across the country, are they locked in, or are they just go, "Oh, it's Cleveland, Oklahoma City, yeah, whatever"?
Well, if you want some evidence to back up what you're talking about, all you have to do is see how many times the Los Angeles Lakers are on national television.
Thank you.
And you're right. I mean, the Lakers are 20-16. They're in sixth place in the Western Conference, and they're just a run-of-the-mill Western Conference team right now.
Mm-hmm.
But because of LeBron and the market, they're all over the place on national television. That's just the way it works.
Celtics for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just...
That's just the way it works. And we know that, right?
Who will the NBA market more moving down the road here?
The Lakers and the Knicks?
Yeah, but at some point LeBron's done, right? They're gonna have to get off that train.
Well, they're not off it yet.
Why should they be?
Exactly right. Exactly right. We'll talk more Cavs coming up a little bit later on in the show. Bob Finan, who covers the Cavs for the News Herald. Medina Gazette. Bob covers the Cavs. He's going to join us coming up on Baskin and Phelps and the Chronicle Telegram, excuse me. And we'll talk with Bob about that. Next, play-by-play man of the Cleveland Browns, Andrew Siciliano, joining us on Baskin and Phelps. Neither does anybody else, including the guy who joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You hear him calling play-by-play on the Browns Radio Network. He's our longtime pal, Andrew Siciliano. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
It is morning where you are, so are you okay?
I am. We are okay. Thank you for asking where we live.
Stuff.
Yeah, it is. I can't really even put it into words. It's apocalyptic. We're one of the few neighbors that has not lost electricity, so charging phones all night and staying up and, you know, texting with people, friends who were evacuating from other parts of town, just seeing who needs a room and who needs what. But, just waking up and kind of assessing everything right now. But there are four major wildfires. The big one is obviously the Palisades one. I mean, the Pacific Palisades is pretty much gone. So, Palisades, you know, the edge of Brentwood, edge of Santa Monica, that corner there. If anyone knows Southern California, you're coming up PCH in Santa Monica, and then you're kind of making that left turn, you know, around the water to through the Palisades and then up into Malibu. That whole corner, that whole area is just devastated. So,
yeah, I'm looking at a map, like 3,000 acres burned. Wow.
Oh, we have 80 mile an hour winds, so that's the issue. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're spraying, if you have five firemen spraying water on a house, because those embers have already hit the next house, and then the next house, and then the next house. So it's pretty bad. Other than that, thank you for asking.
Yes. Well, we can't do anything to help you. We can tell you to hang in there, and that's silly.
No, I appreciate your best. I am okay. We are okay, and there are people in far, far, far worse. So I was just giving the update there.
Well, you know, you always have a place to stay back here. If you can get on a plane, get out of there.
Thank you. I do know that, certainly. And and I appreciate that.
Menigan has a spare room.
Not our house, no.
I was going to say.
We have friends that might put you up.
Deal with me, which...
That's not the way to go right there. That's not
the way.
I got
some work for you to do. I got some rooms to clean and stuff.
I got beer.
No, he's got beer.
A very disappointing season comes to an end at 3-14, and before you know it, you're looking for an offensive coordinator and an offensive line coach. Let's assume that, and we know how pro sports works, so we can say this, next year is critical for Kevin Stefanski. It's critical for Andrew Berry. If you're Kevin, does that put any thought in your head, like, I better have an offensive coordinator that I'm comfortable with, familiar with?
No, absolutely. 1,000,000%, and I think that is a given. I can't tell you what Kevin's going to do, but I'd be stunned if he went on some, you know, crazy outside the box, tear it down again and rebuild it from the ground up and do something crazy. And when I say crazy, I mean something other than the offense that he ran for the previous four seasons. I'd be stunned if the offense did not look mostly, overwhelmingly, like the offense we have seen in the past.
I agree.
It's what he's comfortable with. It's what the majority of successful winning teams are running right now. Look at the Vikings. Look at the Packers. Look at the Rams. I mean, I'll just name a few in the postseason. Obviously, it's what the 49ers run. They're not all identical, but the same core principles. I would have to think that's where you're going.
I would agree with that completely. And that's why I think, if you're interviewing Tommy Rees, who was on your staff for a year, that's a viable option. If you've got Clint Kubiak, who you have some history with, who's available because the Saints staff got blown up, I would think he's a viable option. That comfort factor, I think, has to be critical, and somebody who is going to think like you are and who you know exactly what you're going to get out of him.
I agree. I think the bigger question there is, let's just, you know, do the thought experiment and pick any of those names you just listed, the two names you just listed. Mm-hmm. Is Kevin calling the plays or is the new guy calling the plays? I would love to see Kevin going back to calling plays. I was not in the camp of, hey, you should give it up. As a matter of fact, the timing never made any sense to me. You give it up week 8 after the Deshaun injury. And when you throw Jameis in there to start, knowing that Jameis is probably better in the original system, whatever the original system was, I mean, the four previous years. So that to me is the question. Brian Billick, many, many, many years ago, whenever we worked together at NFL Network, always liked to say, you know, giving up play calling is tricky because once you give it up, it's really hard to give it back or take it back. I think this is one of those unique circumstances where it's okay to take it back. Matter of fact, it might be even advisable. So that is certainly, and I know Kevin deflected that question on Sunday when asked, would he call plays again? But that is certainly, I think, a huge part of that conversation.
We had a chance to hear from Andrew Berry the other day. He's got a unique opportunity with 5 picks in the top 103, right? 4 in the top 100. And Jeff and I were talking about this. He's got a chance to redefine the way people think about him when it comes to picking players in the NFL draft. Your thoughts on the opportunity that lies ahead for Andrew Berry?
I mean, yes to all of that. You also have the chance to turn those picks into even more picks. I know, and I'm not suggesting that Andrew's definitely trading at a 2. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. But listen, you can use those picks to be multipliers. You just have to nail those picks. You know, trading down is fun. You just have, in my eyes, always a little more pressure to get the picks right. But, yeah, you can, at 2, get a franchise-changing player, even if that player is not a quarterback. I mean, let's do the play-along thing and say, let's say it's Travis Hunter. Okay, let's say the Titans go quarterback at 1. Let's say you address your quarterback needs elsewhere, free agency, for example, and then you throw Travis Hunter in there. You get the Heisman Trophy winner coming to town. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think most people have even considered that one. That's a franchise-changing player right there. You got to get the picks right. The 2 threes, I think, are significant, very significant. And the pick at the top of the 4th round as well, where you don't really know where the pick at the top of the 4th round is going to be exactly, because they have to have the compensatory picks at the end of the 3rd. Last year, there are, I think, 5 compensatory picks. And we don't know those until early March.
Andrew Siciliano joining us. With the draft in mind, Rand Carthen let go in Tennessee yesterday. So here's a franchise with the number 1 pick without a GM right now. That's kind of fascinating.
It's semantics. If that thing, that whole situation is fascinating. Full disclosure, Rand's a friend. If you read the tea, if you read the fine print of the team site stories here, they're not really looking for a GM. They have their GM in house. They're looking for more of an assistant GM. That
to the director of football operations.
Yeah, exactly. So they know who's making that pick.
It's interesting. If you're a team in need of a quarterback, and there are lots of them this year, is it a reach if you take Sanders, if you take Cam Ward at the top of the draft? Are you reaching for need this year, do you think?
So here's my general overall quarterback philosophy on the draft. Most of the draft guys will tell you that neither Cam Ward nor Shedeur Sanders are the 1 and 2 or 3 or 4 or even just pure talent, pure draft grade, put them on the board in your draft room, that they are top 5 picks. However, they are widely considered to be the top 2 quarterbacks in this draft. I will always maintain, and go back to Daniel Jones, I said at the day the Giants took Daniel Jones far higher than Dexter Lawrence, and everyone was going nuts. I said, if you think he's the guy, then it doesn't matter where you take him. Because if you can solve the quarterback question, you could do it for a decade, then nobody cares if he was the 2nd pick or if he was the 34th pick or whatever it is.
Agreed.
Nobody cares.
Yep, agreed.
Nobody cares. The Raiders took Derek Carr. Browns were looking for a quarterback that year in the 2nd round. Nobody cared they took him in the 2nd round. They took him there, though. So if you could find the guy, Jalen Hurts, 2nd round pick, take him. That's it. Doesn't matter. You just got to get it right. And obviously, you know the Stadler and Waldorf and all the fans on Sports Talk Radio are going to be screaming and yelling at you even more if you get it wrong at 2 than if you get it wrong at 34. But if you get it right, that's all that matters.
I keep looking through some of these mock drafts, and Shedeur Sanders keeps popping up there. And I'm just, is there an Andrew Siciliano wish list for what they do with that number 2 pick? Let me ask you, how does Sanders fit if that's the way the Browns decide they want to go?
So they're both interesting. And full disclosure, I haven't really started doing a deep dive and talking to all the people whose opinions I trust greatly. But I've done a little bit of it the last few months. Shedeur is great in the pocket. He is more of a pocket thrower. He throws a nice ball. He's got good touch. He's a good player. He truly is. Is he the number 1 overall pick? Most people don't think so in terms of pure overall draft grade, as I said. Cam Ward is an ascending player. The question is, where is his ceiling? Here's a guy who, his senior year in high school in Texas, near Houston, I think he threw the ball like 20 times. I'm not even kidding. I mean, they were a running offense. He wasn't a huge quarterback prospect because he wasn't even really a quarterback. And then he went to Incarnate Word.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday.
Okay, and then, he eventually went to...
Was great there in the Southland Conference.
Yep, exactly. Eventually went to Washington State, and he, at each stop, has gotten better and better and better and better. And if you remember a year ago right now, we're talking about Cam Ward as the number 1 free agent in college football. I mean, other than, like Judkins, who ended up at Ohio State, you know what I'm saying? And where's Cam Ward going to go? Is he going to go to the draft? Is he going to go to Ohio State? There was that tweet, I believe, from Ryan Clark going, Cam Ward's going to Ohio State. He was the guy that everybody wanted. He ended up in Miami and had a great season, obviously, at Miami, and now we're talking about him as a top 5 pick in the draft. So the question is, how much better does he get? And do you think that he fits into the system you're going to run?
Interesting thought. There are, 20, 25 guys in the league right now who are going to be looking for jobs next year, some veteran quarterbacks who have started.
Absolutely.
And some young guys who didn't pan out where they were in the first or second place, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields might, I just think this could go any which way, Andrew. And when you talk about Travis Hunter at number 2, and I think of all the free agents that are going to be available, that sounds really appealing to me.
It does.
If you find a guy, yeah.
Right. The question on the veteran is are you finding a bridge, or are you finding a long-term reclamation project, or do you think you have one and then you have another, like the Vikings, for example? They thought they were signing a bridge, and it turned out to be a possible long-term reclamation project. You know, remains to be seen what they do contractually, but the Vikings still, the week, the day of the draft, were still aggressively trying to move up to get JJ or whomever, a quarterback, who they thought can be their long-term answer. If they thought Sam Darnold was going to be their long-term answer in their building, would they have been aggressively trying to move up to get that guy? Unlikely. So, you know, I'd be a little leery of Zach Wilson. He's certainly talented, and there have certainly been moments, but to go, oh, no, 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 we are going to fix Zach Wilson and he's our long-term answer, I don't know.
Yeah,
that to me, I'm not buying. Trey Lance has barely played. I mean, you might be, this is a great project. Look up top five quarterback picks, and through this point of their career, he may have the fewest snaps or starts of any of them in God knows how many years. So, you know, that to me is a big question mark. But then there are obviously the big ticket veterans, or veterans that used to be big ticket that you can get for cheap, like Kirk Cousins. But if you bring in Kirk, and I'm all for that, by the way, why not? Go for it.
Okay.
I mean, go for it, but that would likely be with drafting somebody, and you would have to have that conversation with Kirk. It couldn't be a draft night surprise.
Like it was in Atlanta. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it couldn't be, hey, Kirk, by the way, guess what we're doing?
Old buddy.
hey, pal, it would have to be an open conversation from day one. And by the way, Kirk is not going in with blinders on anymore. It's going to be the first question he's going to ask any team. Well, what are you doing in the draft? I just went through this. But he might be in a different mindset this time around. All right, I'd be willing to do it. I know I only got a year or two left. He's not the long-term answer, clearly.
Ideally, they love one of these guys coming out and they draft him at two and he's your quarterback of the future. If that doesn't work, you could bring in the veteran like you're talking about, bring in one of the young guys that haven't panned out somewhere, try and coach him up, and maybe you get lucky. At the very least, if you bring in the veteran, you've got your quarterback for next year and maybe two or three. Could that work?
Yeah, it could. I mean, you got to remember the calendar, though. You know, free agency hits the second week of March. So you need to go through the free agent dance long before the draft. Now, are there always guys that could potentially come free later for various reasons? Sure. You're not likely going to find your week one starter in the middle of the summer. You know, a post-June 1 release, that generally doesn't happen. So, you know, free agency is first, and the start of the new league year will, as it always is, will be fascinating. And I mentioned Derek Carr before. I mean, you guys should probably have that conversation as well. Derek Carr said quite firmly on Sunday, excuse me, I am not taking a pay cut.
Don't blame him. He's got the paper that says he doesn't have to, right?
Yeah, why would you?
Right. The Browns aren't going to pay him $40 million. They cannot do that. But it's another quarterback who is likely going to be out there.
And Deshaun Watson's future even more cloudy after the announcement from Andrew Berry the other day.
Yeah, I was just as stunned as you guys when Andrew dropped that one on everybody, and then your wheel starts spinning. What does it mean? Listen, I don't have the injury update yet, but you know it's not ideal when you have Achilles surgery in late October, early November, and it is already re-injured. I think the big question is for cap purposes, without just chalking up the 2025 season as lost, don't know what the recovery time will be, is you look at the cap hit in 26, and you look at the potential cap saving in 26 as well on the insurance, you know, that will have to be unpacked in the coming days as well with more of a diagnosis and more of a recovery timeline. But yeah, it's hard to come back from two Achilles injuries and be on the football field during the same calendar year. A setback, don't know exactly what a setback is, and I don't want to jump to conclusions here. I don't have any more information than what Andrew said, but it's, you know, yes. Deshaun in 2025, in my estimation, on a couch from 2,500 miles away, seems like a bit of a long shot.
Great work this season. Thank you for being with us today, and our thoughts are with you. Hang in there out there.
All right, guys. Stay safe. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
Andrew Siciliano joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That was Andrew Siciliano moments ago right here on Baskin & Phelps. I'll go ahead and advocate for trading out of two, but with a caveat, and that's next.
I could make the same. I'll make an argument. I don't know. We'll see if it's the same. Hey, if you can't get enough of Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima from 6 to 10 a.m., you can tune in Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10:15 on their emerging podcast scene. Listen live on 92.3 The Fan Extras channel, or the Extra channel, on the Odyssey app and at 92.3thefan.com. Presented by X10 Technologies, or check out every single archived episode. I think that podcast sounds amazing at 2:01. It's always my favorite time to listen to. Or, you know, even earlier in the morning. Like, maybe wake up with these guys if you want to. And you can have,
you can
like a double
to it
dose.
During their show.
You can listen to them live, and you can listen to the emerging podcast. Like, you know.
Put one in each ear.
But I just recommend, I would just, like, listen to the commercials in the morning show. That's what I would do. That's just me, though. I'm a commercial guy.
Yeah.
Love listening to commercials.
Yeah, that's Andy Baskin right there. Mm-hmm. I would be delighted if the Browns trade out of two. You know why?
I don't know that I would be delighted.
No, hold on. You know why?
Why?
Because it would mean they firmly did their scouting and are convinced that there's not a quarterback at two that they think they must have. You know what else I'd be really giddy about? If the Browns took a quarterback at two. Because that means they are absolutely convinced that this is the right guy. They have to get the scouting right here. That's what this is all about. They must nail this opportunity. Now, whether it's the pick, whether it's trading the pick or whatever, if they determine that one of these quarterbacks is the guy, great, congratulations, move on, let's go. You've got your guy. As Andrew said, it doesn't matter where you took him. If you drafted your guy and you think you have your guy, that's all that matters. Doesn't matter if you trade for a guy and you think he's your guy and you have your guy, as the Packers did many moons ago when they picked up Brett Favre. Great, you've got your guy. So
I'm just listening to this whole thing. And this is how I feel today, and please give me enough freedom to change my mind somewhere down the road. But if they trade the pick, that's fine. I'm looking at all of these edge rushers that this seems to be a very, very heavy draft for edge rushers, especially for first rounders. Yeah. I also think, you know, it's weird, if there was a clear-cut number one guy in this draft, and maybe that will emerge between now and the draft, you know who has the ammo to go up and get him? We do. If we wanted to move up, we probably could. Now, I'm not saying that you wouldn't have to give up. You'd probably have to give up next year's number one number one for 2 years from now. But if that's how they felt, and that would double down about believing and having full and total confidence in the front office to go up and get a guy that could be a franchise-changing player, I mean, you would think it too. You'd be able to find a franchise player as well. But I don't feel real good about the quarterback situation. I mean, I like watching Shedeur Sanders. I just don't want the circus that's going to happen with him. We've had enough of those.
Why do you say circus?
I don't need his dad.
Yeah, but
his dad's
going to be busy.
It's good, but we've already heard that his dad said, well, we might... he might try to steer him to not go.
So was Eli Manning a circus because Archie Manning was pulling strings?
Archie Manning wasn't coaching and wasn't trying to redefine college football at the same time.
Well, that's college football.
I didn't see Archie doing commercials with a duck. I just don't need it. I just don't.
You see him now.
This team doesn't need drama. They don't. Want to see a team that doesn't have drama right now? They're the winningest team in town, and they're going to play the best team in the West tonight. There's no drama there, and if you like athletics and you like sports, keep your eye on the Cavaliers. I'm done with drama.
You know why you're not done with drama?
No, I'm tired of it. I want to win.
Because you work in sports talk radio.
Yeah,
you're talking
care.
About pro sports franchises that are filled with drama.
Yes.
We just happen to have two here that aren't.
You know what?
We have one that really is.
Yeah, well, I like watching those, but sometimes there isn't a whole lot to talk about other than winning, and I'll take that. Winning. Forrest Gump, thank you.
How does that say? Say it again.
Winning. You, I just, I'm not
Colonel
up for
Klink?
A bit.
You sound like Colonel Klink.
No.
Winning.
Do you want to explain that, Schultz, or what? Do you want to explain Colonel Klink to 95% of our
anybody
audience?
I want to talk to there knows what it means.
All right. My point is, I don't need another drama filled. And I'm not saying that
if Johnny Manziel Sanders is phenomenal, I don't care what Deion says.
Yeah, but what if we're sitting here? Okay, what if a week from now his dad says, we don't want him to play in Cleveland?
All right, well, then you don't take him. Then you make it work.
Yeah, well, would they not take him? That's my question. I don't want to play the game anymore. I'm tired of being the pawn for the rest of the NFL. I'm tired of watching this franchise be a laughing stock for the rest of the NFL. It makes me ill every time I hear a national announcer go, that is the worst trade in sports history. How many times have we heard that over? It's just like matter of fact now when they call games and talk about Deshaun Watson. That was the worst trade in sports history. That's what we. I'm tired. I don't want to be a part of that. And I don't want that to be the narrative of our team anymore. And, you know, maybe Shedeur Sanders is the greatest quarterback of all time. And I would be like, man, I can't believe I said that. But right now, I don't need the circus here. I don't.
I would deal with every bit of the Deion circus if they think his kid is the best quarterback and he turns out to be good.
Jeff, they thought Deshaun was the best thing. You bought into that. I sat there and
said, I didn't like the trade at the time.
But you liked the thought of Deshaun Watson leading this team.
I liked the thought of they think they have their guy. That's what I like the thought of.
Do you, again, this is about trust, man. And the onus now, especially for your GM, who was not happy when he started his press conference the other day, talking about the underachieving team that they had this year. They can't underachieve again. Please stop with the circus stuff. Get us the most talented athlete in this draft that can help us for 10 years with that number two pick. Or trade out of it. If you think you're going to get more out of it and you can get me two or three guys that are going to be able to help this team become the core 4 or 11 or 21 that can change the way, or 22, that can change the direction of this franchise.
Yeah.
Please, I don't need – we've seen the circus. And I'm not saying that Shedeur Sanders, the player, is the circus.
Yeah, but if
but
he's,
we know
he's
what's
good,
going
so
on
what?
There.
Put up with his dad. So what? If he's really good and he's really going to be the guy, I don't care about his dad. Bring him on.
How often does the circus head over to our partners over in Pennsylvania? How often do we talk about the circus?
I don't
over there?
Care about them.
No, because they're winning. They're talking about teams that go to the playoffs every year. They have a coach that's never had a losing season.
And they
why?
Haven't
because
won, and they haven't won big time in a long time. And that's okay.
I would rather make it to the playoffs.
I would too. I'm just saying, if they determine that Shedeur Sanders is the best guy at that pick for them and they think he's going to be a big time quarterback, I'll get Deion a room over at the hotel, and he can come in every time, and he'll have
his own press conferences
that's
after the game.
Great.
That's great.
I don't care if his kid can play and they determine that he's the right guy. I don't care about Deion. Welcome him. Bring him in.
But
let's go.
If he's setting the tone for whether he's going to, I mean, do you want to be held hostage? Do the Browns have to sit around in Berea and go, well, should we take this guy? Or is his dad going to say, hey, maybe we don't want to go to Cleveland. Tell Cleveland we don't want to go there. I'm done being the laughing stock of the NFL. That's my point.
But they're not going to draft him if they don't think that he'll play here. That's the point.
I hope you're right.
Bob Finan's going to talk Cavs with us coming up next. Chris Rose, change his schedule, is going to join us at 12:20. So back-to-back, Finan, Rose coming up on Baskin and Phelps.